You know,
I want it understood.
I'm interrupting that guy. I could add to this. Take the sound off of that. I'm talking now. I remember a story that was told to me years ago about some woman with a bratty kid on a Ferris. One of these things that go in circles and the kid ride horses.
Ferris wheel.
Merry-go-round. Well, he wasn't merry. Man, he'd jump off of one, run to another. Nobody could stop the kid from endangering everybody and doing everything. And she'd plead with him and he wouldn't do anything. And the guy walked up and said to the mother, "I'm a child psychologist. Would you like me to help?" She said, "Oh, yes." He walked up to the kid and leaned over, took him by the shoulder and leaned in his ear and whispered something. And the kid jumped down and ran to his mother and didn't cause any more problem. And the Ferris or the merry-go-round operator said, "You're a child psychologist? Yeah, what did you say to him?" "I whispered his ear and said, 'You get off of this thing right now and go to your mother, or I'll break every bone in your body.'" Now, we will open at 7 with the usual opening, a full opening, but I interrupted to see if you all are listening to this little pastoral speech making. And we're live now. And it's Thursday night, and I want to know that some of you are listening and get on the telephone before 7 o'clock hits, and people will be tuning in, and I'll be able to say where you've been. Get on the telephone. All right, we're live. It's regular time, 7 o'clock, and people ought to be tuning in to see if we're live or not. Sunday at 7 p.m. is Shalom service. Now, there will be care for the children. You don't get in until you're 12 years old. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
King's House, there won't be any bus tour of the kids. They'll be taken care of in a separate part of the building. Shalom service at 7 p.m. And, obviously, the cathedral at 11 a.m. as I continue the excursion and praise. I'm not satisfied with the reservations. We need about another 45. Baptisms, reservations are approaching 100. That'll occupy us for a month or two. And I'm short about 271 double portion commitments for the month of July to be at the norm that we have had for the last few years. Now, there's no reason for that to drop off. And Secret 16, I'm disappointed that we're not even halfway up on either the 300 or the 700. So this half hour, I want to shake you up a bit and have you get back to the commitments that have carried you these many years. Get on the telephone. Now, we're taking reservations for both the Shalom service Sunday and the regular morning worship service at the cathedral. Not one call, separate calls. Because those who mail the passes may get stacks of calls to mail for Shalom service, and stacks of calls to mail for the cathedral. If it's too late to mail, since it's this late in the week, same thing. They prepare separate lists for the two different services. So you can't just do it the easy way and make one call. You got to call and make a separate reservation for the cathedral Sunday morning and for the Shalom service Sunday night. So get busy. I don't see many calls coming in. I can just run some kind of tape and just talk to these people here if you're not going to get on the phone. So get busy. You know, we had a special service this week down at the cathedral. And it was by invitation. And it included all the band members, and it included a large part of the 300 volunteers. And I couldn't believe my eyes. For about 50% of them, it's the first time I ever seen them dressed up. Now, we don't have a dress code at the cathedral. We have intelligent people that are supposed to remember they're going to God's house. And one thing I always admired about Herbert W. Armstrong, into his 80s, and you got to give him credit, he figured that nobody could say it better than he was saying it, so he would sit down and listen to himself on TV. And when the program would come on, he had always dressed just like he was going to preach at the Ambassador Auditorium. He'd sit in his living room, dressed up, showing some respect. Now, I don't really want to come up with a dress code. I just want to watch people that don't have enough sense to show respect and quit giving them reservations. You know? Do I need to say any more than that?
No, sir.
You're coming to God's house. Well, I remember you came in a cowboy hat and chaps and jeans once. That's me, not you. You know, just get this straight. What I do, I usually do for a purpose. You know, it's like I tell you to teach your kids, draw a circle or put a rug on the living room floor and tell your kids, as soon as they're old enough to understand language, don't ever get on that rug. For any reason whatsoever. And sit down on it. I mean, sit there and eat some chocolate ice cream. And the kid says, or if the wife says, well, you're sitting there. That's right. That's me, and you're you. Don't you ever get on this rug. That's what discipline's all about. That's what this generation just can't stand. A bunch of knotheads. The judges, the book of Judges reinvented. Everybody doing what's right in their own eyes. I've been saying for 29 years, it'll be 30 years in November. This church is going to learn to respect God's house, God's word, and God-ordained leadership. Isaiah was told to march 3 years naked in the streets of Jerusalem. Not all the Jews. Now, God may have had a purpose because I'm sure he knew what Isaiah looked like. Not everybody should undress. You know, most people don't believe that Isaiah walked naked through Jerusalem for 3 years. Because they wouldn't listen to God. And God can get very dramatic. He said, they won't listen to my words. So you just spend 3 years streaking full time. And there's only one message I want communicated with this. Why are you looking like that? Because all of you are going to look like this when the Egyptians carry you into bondage. If you don't straighten out, you're going to all march naked in the hot Gaza Strip sun to Egypt. Not everybody in the Jewish camp in Babylon were to put blindfolds around their face and go home and knock holes in the side of their house and carry furniture through the holes, blindfolded, which meant they had to feel their way. He had to, Ezekiel. and then run around carrying that furniture out in the woods, blindfolded. Not everybody in Israel was told to go marry a whore. So just get this straight. On balance, my 30 years here has taught people by example to respect God's house. Now, we have a lot of new people coming. Monkey see, monkey do. Take some responsibility, you old-timers, and make them feel uncomfortable. They ain't coming in beach sandals. Not allowed. Turn around, turn them out at the door. And there are a few other things not allowed. Where do you get to the beach to show all your stuff? Yeah, you know, I've been silent about it because I was beginning to think nobody in my congregation knew how to dress up. But you proved me wrong. Even Reggie had a suit and tie. You look shocked, don't you? Yeah, Reggie showed up in a suit and tie. I didn't know he had one. Dan looked pretty spiffy. And about the same time, there were four. You know, it takes four to go where a Scotch pastor. Four tax assessors showed up. They looked like four bums off the street. If I'd been there, I'd have thrown them out. I'd have said, look, the mission is down the street. You're in the wrong place. You see, we've declared, when I first moved in the cathedral, I deliberately leased it. I told Tom Bradley I was going to keep it on the tax rolls. I leased it. But then, the people in the city and the county that appreciate our effort to bring a spiritual presence downtown, all died or retired or moved. And I'm still so angry I can't hardly see. If I'd have been there, I'm telling you, there would have been some fireworks. It's four people come in. We've declared our exemption, folks. It's not a matter of privilege. They don't have a right to decide whether or not we're exempt. We are exempt. Federal government's decided that. I'm pretty good at teaching people at the state level, don't try to take away a federal right. We've declared our exemption. We give more to the city than the taxes. It's our right. We're exempt. It's not a privilege. This is a constitutional right. They come with their tape measures and stuff. And one jerk asks the question, what's the purpose of these Bibles? I mean, if I'd have sat down there and said, which door were you hiding behind when they passed out the brains? What purpose does the Shroud of Turin serve at that church in Venice? This is a Bible church. Can you read? Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven. What purpose do those million-dollar tapestries hanging at the Queen of Angels Cathedral in downtown Los Angeles, what purpose do those tapestries with pictures of religious figures, what purpose do they serve? What purpose does the Torah serve in a synagogue? What purpose do the icons serve in a Greek Orthodox church? I mean, God help me, I thought after 30 years I had found the dumbest bureaucrats on the nation, but I guess I didn't. I've told you as a congregation from the moment we threw the leasing people out, the people that were leasing the tower, there is no tower. There is the University Cathedral with the main sanctuary and the prayer and worship tower. There is the cathedral and the cathedral sanctuary and the cathedral tower. There is no cathedral and a tower. There's one building. I told you from the day we got it, we would not lease it again. It will have only church activity, only worship and prayer center. Only worship and prayer, and every square inch of that cathedral tower included. Now we can do this the easy way or the hard way. Don't make me make this a public fight. I got much experience in it. He pulled my monkey band out again, and the Kushu University grant to the imbecilic graduated BM award for the bureaucratic monkey of the year, and frying them all in my monkey hall of infamy. Don't make me do it the hard way. We all know the way to the county supervisor's offices. Don't treat me any different than any other church. Don't come down there like a goddamn monkeys wearing monkey suits out of a slum and come with your cynical attitude into God's house. They'd have taken their shoes off and saluted if I'd have been there. Now, that's my first little kind warning delivered over the airwaves. Don't want to have to talk about it anymore. But you as a congregation know I've said from day one, that tower is part of the cathedral. It's dedicated as a downtown worship center. That's all it is. That means it's exempt. Nothing more to talk about. Get on the telephone. You're doing pretty good. Pretty good. That's not good enough. It's Thursday night, and we're live, and I want more action on the telephone before I start teaching. Get busy.
Come on.
You know, there is a wonderful spirit. It's been absent for a long time. And I credit the response of the volunteers to be one of the 300. There is a real spirit of excitement and go forward. And I'm also grateful my wife began this week a weekly staff prayer meeting in the chapel here for my health. I've said many times it's harder to keep a healing than it is to get one. A lot of you that fasted and prayed the prostate cancer out of my body, quit doing that. I am convinced that God will give me the time to finish Romans, including all my excursions. I mean, I did 36 messages in the excursion in faith. It will probably take that many to finish the excursion in praise. That adds a whole year almost. And I'm still in the third chapter of the 27th verse. But I want to commend the volunteers for their sacrifice. And I feel sorry for you that were on the cusp and almost did and didn't. And more sorry for those that quit doing what they were doing because of some quirk in their mind that since they couldn't do the 12 hours, they thought they'd stop doing what they were doing. And even more sorry for those handful that made the commitment and have slacked off. You're making a difference. I wanted to tell you that. And get on the telephone and rejoice with me. All right, no more calls. I'm going to take you to some old familiar territory we've been over before. You know, there wasn't any chapter and verse in the New Testament. We have the original of Tophonus, Greek folio, after Erasmus produced it, in which he wrote the chapters and verse in the New Testament in the margin. You can see it in the foyer of the cathedral. You see that his handwriting in the margin is different than the printed Greek letters. There wasn't any chapter 8 in 2 Corinthians after, and there wasn't any 16th verse, and then there wasn't any first verse of chapter 8, because there wasn't any chapter 8 and there wasn't any verses. Paul's writing a letter to the Corinthians. Open your Bibles and go there to what we show as the 8th chapter of 2 Corinthians. This is Paul the pastor talking. I've been there. This spoiled-brat church that had more attention from the Apostle Paul than any of the other churches. But he's saying in the 16th verse, it earlier said in the 14th, if I have boasted anything to him, having talked about the Corinthian church to Titus, if I have boasted anything to him of you, I'm not ashamed. 16th verse, I rejoice therefore that I have confidence in you in all things. Now, try to get in the frame of Pastor Paul talking to these saints that he turned to Christ. Moreover, brethren, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. There wasn't any chapter breakup. Let's just put the two together. I rejoice, therefore, that I have confidence in you in all things, but I want you to pay attention. I'm going to point something out to you. You need to understand, get your wits about you, and hear me about the grace of God. Everybody likes to hear about the grace of God. Oh, boy. I want to hear about the grace of God. That's poured out on me. Pour it on, preacher. Come on, neighbors and friends. Paul's going to tell us about the grace of God. Everybody likes to hear about the grace of God, don't they?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's where I can settle in my pew. Pastor's on my favorite subject, the grace of God. Hallelujah. Well, let me tell you what it looks like. Let me point out to you. We do you to wit. Assuming you have some wits, let me sort of insert into your wits. Of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. Now, who in the world are those people? The poorest Christians in the land. The churches in Macedonia were at the crossroads of the Roman legions marching into the Middle East, round and down the Middle East into the Horn of Africa, and the Roman legions lived off the land. So whatever they harvested, here comes the Roman legions taking it with them. And they're left to hope they can scrounge out a little more before another tide of legionaries storms through and takes what they grow this time. It's analogous to what the people were doing in the Old Testament when Gideon was trying to scrounge out a little wheat for some bread in a wine press. I mean, Pastor, I want to hear about the grace of God, and you're going to now shoehorn in something about the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. I mean, considering the condition they're in, my understanding of grace is sort of forcing the question, what kind of grace have they got? That's a different kind of grace than I want to hear about. The grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia keeps them poor. I want you to... Moreover, brethren and sistern, we do you to wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. Now, I want you to understand that grace in this case is used synonymously with the presence of God. To use those, what I consider to be, artificial compartments of theology that you've watched me contest as I teach through the book of Romans, well, I'm justified. Now, that's a legal standing before God. And because of what Christ has done, he imputes to me. He takes me as though I'm not and looks at me as though I am Christ and I am covered with rose-tinted glasses and I'm justified. And if God would ask me, I would say, that's really all I need. Don't bother with the rest. I'll take that. Just let me be myself. Doing what I've been doing, justified. It's a legal term. The only problem is the Greek didn't have that term. The Greek only has a word that can only be translated as righteousified. Changed from what I was, unrighteous, to what I am beginning to become, righteousified. Now, it's a gift. And the thing that's been forgotten in theology is that the standing before God, the being covered by the price having been paid, is to let God in without compromise, not to give me some permanent fixated status that I can rest in and do no more. Because I am suddenly, sinner that I am, given a standing because of what Christ did that allows God without compromise of his righteousness to move his spirit into me. So grace is not just a covering of a sinning man, utterly unchanged within. Grace is a status of acceptability for the spirit to come in. But it is an instantaneous entrance because of the status, simultaneous occurrence, and thus grace is a personified implant of God's own Spirit. Thus, I could use substitute words for this word grace, unmerited favor, charisma, charis, all the various derivatives. I could say, in place of grace, and I've taught this before, let me introduce you to wit of the love of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. I could use the power of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. I could use the Spirit of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. All the word grace adds is that there is a giving of something. not deserved. It is an outflowing from the heart of God, of God's own nature, into an undeserving vessel that has been paid for, cleansed, in that the price of the sins have all been paid, and thus now the vessel is an acceptable place for God by His Spirit to come in and dwell and start the process of cleaning up the unworthy, sinful, filthy, undeserving house. Grace is not a paintbrush like the Pharisees painting the outside of a sepulcher with dead men's bones inside. It's an injection. It's a transfusion. It's a penetration. It's an implant in an undeserving vessel of new life. The word grace is describing all of this, putting the emphasis on unmerited, undeserving capacities in the vessel. These poor, miserable Macedonians, let me tell you what God's grace, God's love, God's power, God's Spirit bestowed on them produced. Well, I want God's grace. Well, He wants you to have it. As His love, power, unmerited favor, and life implanted and indwelt in you. And you boasting Corinthians that are so proud of your being plutocrats in the Spirit, let me talk to you about what the grace of God looks like in the most impoverished of the saints, the Macedonians. How that in a great trial of affliction, I just described it, in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded under the riches of their liberality. Most of you will have in the margin there the word simplicity, but liberality is a better translation because it has to do with the simplicity of their giving. It was spontaneous. For to their power, just using a synonym for grace, for to their grace, as it was working in and through them, I bear record, yea, beyond their power, they were willing of themselves, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship, koinonia, joint participation, that they might jointly participate with me, Paul, and my co-workers of the ministering to the saints. Begged with much begging, praying us with much entreaty, because he was taking up an offering. And this is how the Spirit of God, the grace of God, the power of God, the life of God operated in them. To hear of the chance to be a joint participant with Paul, out of their poverty they begged with much begging that they might participate jointly with Paul in giving. And this they did not as we hoped. They went beyond, but first gave their own selves to the Lord and unto us by the will of God. Insomuch that we desired Titus that as he had begun, so he would also finish in you, who's coming to take up an offering with them. The same grace also. The same grace also. In the margin, you'll have the word gift. The same giving, the same grace, the same power operating, the same indwelt spirit operating, the same life operating in you. Therefore, as ye abound in everything, in faith, and in utterance, they're talking in tongues all the time, in knowledge, and in all diligence, sacrifice of work, and in your love to us, see that ye abound in this grace also. I speak not by commandment, but by occasion of the forwardness or example or that which was demonstrated of the grace of God working in these Macedonians, the forwardness of others, and to prove, literally, the reality of your love, of your grace, of the power of God in you, of the life of God in you, of the Spirit of God in you. In other words, you prove the genuineness of God's Spirit in you, and I can't command this out of you, but if the same Spirit is in you, you will be like the Macedonians. You won't have to be beat on to give, because you are going to have that same Spirit. God gave His Son. Christ gave His life. You can't claim to have the Spirit of God in you and not be a spontaneous giver, which is why God loves the hilarious giver, because He recognizes Himself in you when it happens. How many years have I taught this? You need to take a look at the Macedonians that I don't beat on you about Secret 16. You've done it before, you can do it again if that same grace and same Spirit is in you. You're on the telephone. Now, I don't want to take much time because I want the calls to come in. I'm seriously concerned about my congregation, and I'm concerned about the new people coming in that haven't been taught as much as you've been taught. Let me read to you in the Greek. Ukat, shortening kata according to. U, the negative Greek word, unot. Caught according to epitagin, a command, lego, I speak, Allah, but, dia, through, tis, definite article, heteron, the of others, studis, diligence, kai, I'm coming to a word, and to the tis humateras, the of your agapes, from agapao, love, which is the only love that God commands. Unlike phileo, which is mutual, or eros, which everybody knows for erotic. Agapao, uncalculated giving of yourself to the other because of what you're aware and are affected by, the intrinsic worth of the object being loved. The of your love, agapis, gnision, not sincerity, genuineness, gnision. Same root from which we get genuine. The genuineness, doki matzon. Now let me put it out of the Greek, strange way of linking the words. The genuineness of your love testing. This is a test. People say, well, you know, I've heard you say that for Paul, the absolute genuine mark that you are indwelt of the Spirit and possessed of the Spirit and have the grace as substance of God's nature dwelling in your unworthy crock of clay. The absolute mark is not speaking in tongues. I speak in tongues more than you all. I've grown up in that experience. I'll never forget my first experience of indwelling as a teenager. I've lived in the charismatic and Pentecostal revival. I don't question the genuineness of it, but I'm with Rinal Niebuhr, those who make it a mark of pride and stop their progress in God, and they think they've arrived, and they suddenly wrap themselves in some superiority because they've had this experience. The devil can imitate that. I've seen people at Shinto sect meetings in Japan speak in tongues. I've seen it in spiritist meetings, not the ones they show the tourists, but the real ones down in Brazil. That can be imitated. Every other so-called mark of spirituality, the devil can imitate it. There's one mark that he will not, cannot imitate. There is nobody that will give as the Macedonians gave unless the giving Spirit of God Himself indwells you. That ain't natural. It ain't human. Nobody will give week in, week out, day in, day out, for no reason other than the intrinsic value of expressing that grace of giving for God's sake and for His gospel. It's not in you. Or you can motivate people, give to get, and they'll try it for a while. If they don't get, they'll quit. Tithing is a recognition of God's ownership. This is not the tithe. The Macedonians tithe because that's not giving anything. That isn't giving. That's obedient avoidance of thievery. That's recognizing that you've been bought with a price and He has all of you. And you give Him what He has said is the portion you don't touch. It belongs to Him. The tithe is the Lord's, not discussable. Offerings spring from a heart that has implanted within it God's own nature. For no cause He gave His Son, because God so loved the world. For the love of His Father, not discounting His love for us, He went to the cross and open the door for that same nature to dwell in us. The mark of the genuineness of God's Spirit in you is declared right here in this verse. So translate it right. To prove or test the genuineness of this grace, of this love, the charein, the agapes, the charein, the grace, the agapes, the life that God's put in you. Now, I suggest that many of you that have retreated in your giving face up to the fact you've lost and grieved the indwelling Spirit away, because if the Spirit is operating in you, you're a giver. After 30 years, you shouldn't have to be urged and beat on. You shouldn't have to have God look at you with embarrassment, because you've decided you have needs that are more important than the Macedonians who begged to be a part of this gospel that we take 24/7 to the world, as it has not been done Oh, there are others through the history of the church that have rediscovered Paul and lifted his message out of the morass of clerical nonsense and church council garbage and jargon and theological fights, and revival came. No one in 2,000 years has taken the message of Paul to the whole world. 24/7. You're the luckiest people in the world to be able to koinonia, jointly participate in that activity. And you have sat around since January and not made a commitment of $3,000 by Christmas? You can't even buy a car you can drive in the city here. You can't even pay your insurance on a car here for less than that. $150 people out of 700. Given $3,000 by Christmas. Spirit of God and these Macedonians would have busted the thermometer already. What are you waiting on? God to give it to you first? He gave His Son and gave you His Spirit. What will an accident on the freeway, what will a sickness in the hospital, how long will it take that to eat up $3,000? You're not bargaining with God. I'm pointing out, Paul said, I can't command this from you because you don't command life. It's like commanding somebody to love you. You got to love me. Are you insane? You can't do that. You can't make anybody love you by yelling at them. Why, he said, I speak not by command, but maybe waking you up by the occasion or example of this eagerness on the part of others. And to give you a chance to prove the genuineness of the grace of God in you. The love of God in you. The power of God in you. To change your self-centered nature. The grace of God in you. The Spirit of God in you. Amazing how the King James can cover up what's really being said. You ought to be fighting to get to the phone. If it kills me, I can give $3,000 by Christmas. I'm tired of looking at this thermometer. I wish I could command it. And there's some of you I can probably yell into doing something. But that doesn't prove the Spirit of God in you. Wake up, folks. They're tongue talkers who never give a dime. But paradoxically, I've noticed organizations like the Billy Graham organization, they want the Pentecostals coming. Whatever else you may say about the Pentecostals. Though they flaunt their tongues and they take pride in their self-style superiority, the simple statistical data of the church world shows that those that have had this experience of the infilling of the Spirit become better givers than those that haven't. I've never seen a Pentecostal revival. Never lost money. The infilling of the Spirit in any dimension raises the giving urge in the recipients. It's tragic that you have to be reminded of this. Well, what's the cure? Recognize you've slipped. You're no longer hilariously giving. That was the mark of this ministry for many years. Now there's a lot of people slipping into the congregation, this marvelous cathedral they couldn't pay for in a lifetime. I'm tired of getting change in the offering. To tell you the truth, I can understand the widow who had two mites, and if that's all she got, she gives it, and let me give it back to her. But Jesus didn't. He commended her. Her giving was more than anybody because she had two mites. She could have given half of what she had, but she gave it all. I'm getting too many $1 bills in the offering, and I'm noticing the way they're rolled up into a little tight wad, so it looks like you're putting a bunch of money in. What can you do in today's world with 25 cents other than a parking meter? The cathedral is not a parking meter. That kind of chintz you're giving, take it to some other church. I've watched ministries grow on traffic. Flood your mailbox and have an average per capita giving of maybe $5 a month. That means people are living on $50 a month. Even the tithe of that's $5. Listen to what I'm telling you. Giving is the mark of the Spirit in you. And if you have not the Spirit of Christ, you are none, absolutely none of His. He has nothing to do with you. Well, I don't feel like giving. Well, you're going to hell. Say that again. Gladly. I don't feel like giving. Well, you're going to hell. Well, I don't think you need the money. Right, I don't. You need to be like the Macedonians. Old Scott is not going to get the rewards up there by himself. I'm going to be standing there with him. Because I want to be a participant. You can use Dwight L. Moody and go out and see how many people you can corner in a parking lot or how many doors you can knock on and win to Jesus the rest of your life. You won't have as much effect in your whole lifetime as this ministry has in one day. And you have a right to be a part of it. Now, I want the hilarious giving back in this congregation. They used to mark it and set it apart. This is not a ministry that exists on little old ladies' nickels and dimes. Their tithe, no matter how poor you are, belongs to the Lord. And offerings, if they're given with a hilarious Spirit of God and sacrifice, you get the same credit as a million-dollar giver. But some of you fat cats in this organization that wonder why that everything's going wrong in your life and why you're losing so much, maybe you ought to look when you stop giving properly. Why should God bless a self-centered tightwad like you? If you're going to give a dollar, quit wadding it up. Cost me more to unwad it than the dollar's worth. Now, you either have the Spirit of God or you don't. If you don't, you're going to hell. Now, which are you? Talk to God and get on the telephone. I'll continue this to prove the genuineness of your love or the grace in you of God, the Spirit of God in you, the power of God in you, the life of God in you. For you know the grace, the power, the life, the Spirit of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though He was rich, yet for your sakes He became poor, that ye through His poverty might be rich. Don't claim you have the grace, the power, the life, the Spirit of Christ if you're not a giver. Self-contradictory. I want to see this 3,000 by Christmas, the 700. I want to reach that goal, not lock in at 150. You mean only 150 in this entire congregation across this nation around the world are willing to give $3,000 for Christmas? Well, what's it for? None of your business. You're trusting your pastor as he has for 29 years to use it in the right way. Doesn't matter. You are participating in the worth of the gospel, and you want to know that you are participating with what I'm doing. Now get on the phone. 700 people giving $3,000 by Christmas above your tithe. That includes your double portion offering. That includes your tabernacle offering, which will come up in September and October. That even includes your birthday offering to the pastor, which occurs a couple of weeks from now. This will be my 30th birthday with you. It better be a good one. It also celebrates my 4th anniversary. And you should be glad I married Melissa for what she's doing to this church. What are you going to do with the birthday offer? What are you going to do with the birthday offer? Well, it's mine. It's none of your business. But I think I'm going to give it as an anniversary present to my wife. It's none of your business what I do with it. You know, you read on this chapter, you're going to find the Corinthians are concerned about what Paul's going to do with the money. Macedonians never ask any questions about it. They just begged that they might participate with Paul. They trusted him. After 30 years, you earn some credits. I don't even like anybody asking a question of me. I'm 30 years crotchety, cranky. I've proven myself. You're on trial now. You give because of what God's Spirit prompts within you. We haven't done too good with what Christ gave, His blood. But He gave it. Spirit of life eternal is turned loose when you give to reap a harvest of life eternal for you. I want to stop talking. I want you to start talking into these phones. It's a disgrace for this church to be this far into the year, having started in February, and only 150 of the 700 have committed themselves to 3,000 by Christmas. Now get on the telephone. You're responding now to the teaching. Paul goes on to say, in the next chapter, not commanding but urging, having used the Macedonians as an example, "This I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly." Some of you that quit tithing, you're better off than you were when you were tithing. Well, I'm no worse off. You're worse than you would have been. "Every man, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. Every man according as he purpose or willeth in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity." That's why I'm so glad we reached the stage that we don't have to raise money on some basis of need. For God loveth, and the word I've taught on this, to cognate word from which we get hilarious, hilaros, the hilarious giver. Spontaneous, it's like the word hallelujah. I want this next half hour nothing but giving. And all you that are already on the board in the 700 or the 300 giving 10,000 or the 700 giving 3,000, get on the phone and keep faith in this room. There are other things to be done on the phone. Double portion for the month of July. That counts towards Secret 16. 150 is a disgrace for this congregation out of the 700 to give 3,000 by Christmas. You make the first act like the widow that was at Zarephath. You know, all these social service freaks that don't believe in God would criticize Elijah. He comes out of the desert. God told him that he had prepared a widow that would take care of him in place of the ravens that flew by the brook Cherith. Go to her. He gets there, she doesn't have anything. He asks for something, she says, "I only got enough for one meal. I'm preparing it now for me and my boy, and then we're going to die." Well, now, let's be Mr. Softheart. There ain't no God anyway, so, you know. I'm not going to be a con artist. Well, you eat it, ma'am, you and your boy. Or, like some today's world would have said, okay, God, you said a widow, but this ain't the one. She ain't got anything. Wrong widow. No, he said, you serve me first. Only got enough for one meal. Me and my boy eating it half and half, we're going to die. No, you serve me first, and then you divide the half that remains. Now, tell me something more selfish than that. You leave God out of the equation. God honors his word. God said, I've prepared a widow. And her heart was right. She served the prophet first. And then the miracle started. Every day, the oil just kept flowing in the pot. She couldn't empty it. Every day. Get on the beam with God. Now let's get this 700 behind us, and then I'll work on the 300 that need to give 10,000. Get on the telephone. Ah, you may say, well, 3,000 by Christmas is 5 months, August, September, October, November, December. That's $600 a month. All right. If you had made the pledge last January, it'd be less than 300 a month. Well, I don't know how I can do 600 a month. Well, some of you can't, although you're not supposed to go by sight, you're supposed to go by faith. But we're not talking about 60,000 king's houses given 3,000 by Christmas. We're talking about another 550 of the 60,000 king's houses. We're talking about 550 people more across this nation and around the world with the Macedonian spirit so working in them. They hurl themselves in faith. I'll find a way to give $3,000 by Christmas. 5 months. $600 a month. Might be surprised after you give the first 600 what God starts doing. Well, when he starts doing, I'll start giving. No, you won't. Better take what I read literal. These Macedonians were poverty stricken, but they begged with much giving that they might be able to koinonia, jointly share with Paul, who has taken up an offering for far away Jerusalem. I mean, I can't think of a worse use of God's money, the worse use of donors' money, than sending it to that church pastored by James. I mean, a bunch of legalistic asteroid orifices led by the asteroid orifice of the first century. They're still in the Middle East. They pride themselves in their name. When James said to Paul, okay, you go to the Gentiles, but remember the poor. He didn't say poor, he said Ebionites. They're so proud of being poor in Jerusalem, they named the church after that, them. The Ebionites are still existing in the Middle East, still just as poor. Now, Paul, because of his sense of allegiance that took him to Jerusalem repeatedly, he'd taken up an offering for them. I can't think of anything worse than that. He should have been at Corinth taking up an offering for the Macedonians. Get out of this God-damned, and I'm not swearing, God-damned worldly attitude that's moved into the church. You better be careful what you do with your money. When you turn loose of it, it ain't yours. You are giving because the Spirit of God within you makes you want to participate and follow the man that's guiding your soul as he follows Christ. If you can trust me to unfold the Word of God on Sunday morning, you can trust me to do with Secret 16 that which you give. I could add up much more than the total Secret 16 goal. We just turned loose just a little bit south of $100,000 to replace the tank that cools the cathedral. It hadn't been changed in 30 years. Look around you in this studio. Go in the restrooms. Look at the ongoing work. These are not ordinary operating expenses that keep us on the air. This is not airtime that we purchase. This is not the $100,000 we pay for the big dish satellite and the $30,000 we pay every month to supply 24/7 to about 100 KU band people, and we ought to have 3,000 of those. This is shoring up this ministry for the days ahead, the unglamorous thing. Over many years in this city, this church has supported and given, and I've supported and given, and I always tell the mayor, come to me for that which nobody wants to give to. Everybody wants to see their name on something. Come to me when nobody else is going to help you. I don't give designated gifts. The hardest money to raise is undesignated money. Everywhere you turn, we're shoring this ministry up. Some of you will remember how much we spent to bring the cathedral from the condition it was in. Well, I can tell you the tower was worse. New roofs on everything. Secret 16 is enabling those who participate to participate in every facet of this ministry more than anything we've done through all 16 of the secrets. Now we got 14 minutes, and I want this 150 to climb as people commit themselves out of the many who cannot. But there are 700 people in this worldwide congregation that can give the $3,000 by Christmas. Now get on the telephone. Okay, Brian, come over here and run that ribbon up about a third of the way to 200. We're at 164. I don't like to dwell in the 60s. I want it to go up to the 200. I get it on up to 200 as we move toward the 700, giving 3,000 by Christmas. Don't stop. Get on the telephone. You know, you that have already become part of the 700 need to keep faith on these lines. There's somebody with a sense of humor in their paying of compliments from Glendale. You see things when you come here as a voice of faith that are being done all the time. I know it's only a small thing, but I have never seen an ass gasket dispenser like the one you have in the bathroom. That's a stupid, quote, little thing. I can only imagine the care and the beauty and the love you put into the other areas than just the comfort station. I'll see you Sunday, right? Or see you Sunday night. Well, some people appreciate the love and the concern that we show. Get on telephone.